Yeah, we got Jack the Ripper, and that's even better. Boy, you look at the guy who was the face of this franchise when he got here was a 19-year-old. You got here as a 19-year-old, right?
Just for a week, the last week of the season, and then 2 weeks the next year, and then I made the big leagues, but I was platooned that next year after that in 77. So,
boy,
78 was my first year.
Joe Altobelli was the manager, and I remember they put you at third base.
I came up as a third
baseman.
Remember
that?
I did, yeah. I came up as a third baseman. Even when I was traded and went to the Cardinals, I was a right fielder, as I was here. A couple of days into spring training, Whitey Herzog came to me and said, you know, I know you played third base for the Giants. They're making you a third baseman. Would you play first base? Because I don't want to platoon Ben Slyke and Landon, all three of you guys in right field. I didn't really want to go, but he had a point, you know, and he said, I'll tell you what, if you don't like it over there by the All-Star break, I'll get you out of there. I told him I didn't like it. He says, oh, you look like a natural. And I say,
how was that?
Jack Clark is with us. And again, if you look at the face of the franchise, here for Jack Clark.
Thank you.
He was the slugger. Well, I remember when you came up as a third baseman, my friend Michael Gaines and I used to come to the games, and if you sat behind first base, with you at third, you had to bring a glove.
Yeah.
If you were sitting in the stands. I do remember that.
Yeah, I didn't have a soft touch, though.
No, you didn't.
Over there.
Trust me.
It was everything I had.
Trust me.
Hey, even
in
the minor leagues, you had to bring your glove behind.
Never forget it. We sat behind first with a glove when he was at third base. But
it was better I was in the outfield.
Come on. Are you kidding? What do you think of seeing Marichal here? And then we're going to talk about Bonds and what this means to him and baseball.
Yeah, you know, and I said it when I first sat down. I said, just such a class act, you know, just a pure man, human being, sports, loves San. When he says he loves San Francisco and loves the Giants and loves his players that he played with, that he's going to see out there. They don't see each other all the time, and they're just like brothers. They really are. And I got to meet him a little bit when I camped with the organization, and he would be in the clubhouse. And he just always made you feel like family, you know. Just those guys, the Mazes and the Marichals and the McCullers. I got to play with Stretch for a few years, you know, and it was just a pleasure, just an honor. And I learned a lot from him. I learned one time, I was batting third, he was hitting fourth, and it was the bottom of the ninth at Candlestick, and we were down by one run. I got a base hit, and then he hit one out. And so I was at home plate when he came around. When he got to home plate, I put my arms around him, lifted him off the ground, you know. And he said, put me down. Don't ever do that again. So I learned right away when the Hall of Famers and the greats do some, it's, you know, you learn that way to be humble in this game because the next day could be a bad one.
Now, how about when you would hit one and they greeted you? Did anybody ever pick you up?
No, they never picked me up, and I think they'd have a hard time picking me up now. You know, they pull a muscle, probably.
How about when you hit it in the playoffs of Niedenfuhr?
Well, that was interesting because that was the top of the ninth in L.A. in Los Angeles. So as I hit it, I took my time going around the bases for sure because it's trying to show me up. First base was open. And when I came around third, I took a wide turn so I could kind of get by the Dodgers dugout in time in Lasorda. That was probably the slowest trot I ever took, and it was on purpose. And there was a lot of, you know, anger from all the years as a Giant. And so that was for the fans in San Francisco. And I said that a lot after the game and the post game. That was for the Cardinals and Whitey Herzog, Gussie Bush, the owner. Red Changes was there. May he rest in peace. Just recently passed away. But also for all San Francisco and the Hank Stowers and the Jimmy Davenports, you know, and the McCoveys and Mike Murphy in the clubhouse, you know, and the Joe Morgans and just the people that went through, the Dwayne Kuipers and teammates that we had, you know, that were special friends. And all we wanted to do was win. And it was a tough place to win, and we never really got the support. And it was tough battling, you know, those guys down in L.A., Chavez Ravine and everything. So when I got to home plate, I came around third, and it was like my whole team, the Cardinal team, was out at home plate. I was like, well, what are you guys doing here? We haven't won the game. It's not over with. It's not a walk-off. You know, we still have to play the ninth. But even Vince Colvin, who had been hurt, that tarp had rolled up on his knee and cracked his knee, he limped out. He was one of the first guys. And I remember Jack Buck and all the great Jack Buck is not with us anymore, and also Vin Scully, both had stories about that. And I remember Vin Scully saying, look, even Vince Coleman is out there. So it was a big moment, but it was unfinished because we still had to get him out in the ninth.
Yeah. Boy, great story. And for those who don't remember it, the Cardinals, Dodgers for the pennant. And Tom Lasorda had first base open, and Jack came up. And Tom Niedenfuhr was on the mound, and Lasorda said, pitch to him. And Jack took it out, and the subsequent story of
first
going
pitch.
To it. Yeah. I'll never forget it. It was one of the great, great home runs, one of the great postseason home runs ever.
They had struck me out the time before, a couple innings before. And the Dodgers always pitched to me that way, like a candlestick. You know, Sutton and those guys always climbed the ladder, and they had a book on me. If they threw it up here, I always felt like I could get to it, throw it a little higher, and I'd chase them, and they'd get me out. It was Bobby Welch or whoever. And so I was on the on-deck circle. I was thinking just my guru hitting coach, Hank Sauer, just said, be ready for fastballs, anticipate strikes, and make sure you get three good swings. I didn't know whether they were going to pitch around me. I didn't know whether they were going to try to get me to chase something, maybe get 2-0, and then put me on. I didn't know. I really didn't care. I thought about my San Francisco days and all the frustration and everything else and getting payback for the city and the losses and coming in fifth place when they were down there having a good time. And so it was more special for me in a lot of ways than I know St. Louis benefited from in the Cardinals, and that's who was paying me at the time, and that's who I was working for, and I was supposed to do that.
Well, as a fan, I love to hear that when my player's talking about or even a former player not liking a team that I dislike.
Yeah.
Did you feel like that as a player a lot, like a real distaste for
yeah,
L.A.?
Yeah. Well, you heard Juan talking here right now when he played the Dodgers. But when you played anybody, when you played Cincinnati and the Big Red Machine, there was a real hatred. You didn't talk to each other before the game. You better not talk to the other team with Juan Marichal pitching and see you talking to someone the other. Better not talk to the team when Bob Gibson's pitching and he sees you talking to another player, laughing it up. You know, there could be problems during the game, and he wanted to make sure your focus was business.
Fraternization. Did not like fraternization.
No, they didn't like
this
it.
This generation likes it. They hug each other all day long. I don't like it.
They run their sprints. They beat out
like
center
it.
Field.
It's true. They high five before the game.
Yeah.
Allie Williams, I told you this. I tried
Everybody's
to explain.
Everybody's happy, but I like the other way because it's not the minor leagues. It's not college. It's the pros. And when you get here, there's a certain attitude. That's why I don't like it that they've taken out. You can't take the guy out at second. I don't like it that you can't take the catcher out. That's part of the game. That's part of the game when you get to the pros in the big leagues. Money's on the line. Fans are paying to come see it. They're looking for an effort out there. And it's that dash for home. It's that great play that now you have to give the guy room and you can't cross that and everything. And it just has taken away a little bit. I mean, I would imagine football players, even though that's changed a little bit, you can't hit the quarterback and all that, but it used to be, hey, I liked it when they kicked off and the guy would return it instead of just going to the end zone and take a knee and then bring it out. I mean, part of that violence, and baseball isn't as violent, but you can make it a little violent, and it needs to be there because it's men playing men. And I was going to talk to you, Marty, too. It's like, you know, a lot of these great players, the Musials, and Ted Williams, a lot of these guys missed time because they went into the military.
It's a war.
Yeah, so they came out. The last thing they wanted to do was see everybody hugging and giving each other high five and patting each other on the back going, hey, that's a great hit you had. Well, you're just talking about a great hit against my teammate. That didn't happen. That
Would you look play. At these young ladies and tell them no fraternization in baseball?
None.
There shouldn't be any.
None. We don't want it. All right. I had this big discussion with him the other day, tried to explain.
Well, it's an element
the game
of the game.
The game has changed, but there's also something that there's just a pride of that uniform, the one you're wearing right there. It says San Francisco, not the name on the back. The fans that are out here that are paying money, you see them all in line here wearing Giants gear, Giants hats. They're, you know, sure, if you want to wear the visiting team, you're playing the Pirates. If Pirates fans are here, that's fine. But this is home for San Francisco. And to go out there and be nice to those other guys. I know when we went there, they weren't nice to us. Why should we be nice to them? If their ground crew wasn't nice when they came in here, we weren't nice to them when they came in here.
I like it. All right.
So do I.
Boy, so Jack Clark with us. Great to have Jack here just to hear some baseball story. This is good. So you're connected with, we talk about the Pine Tar Grill all the time. And you're now Jack Clark. Pine Tar Grill. And you're with Dave here and at 5th and Folsom, so you're connected with
partnered
it?
Partnered up with Dave over there and put my name to it, and I'm very proud of that. And when he called me, I told him I was very humbled to because it's a Candlestick Park themed restaurant, and he's been collecting things for that restaurant for over 35, 40 years. And I think, and you've been there, Marty, a few times, I think it just came out beautiful. It's fantastic.
Yeah, we love it.
If you haven't been there, you need to go there and check it out. It's between Folsom and 5th and 6th.
Yeah, 5th and
it's
Folsom.
It's open, but we haven't had the grand opening yet, so we're just getting ready, geared up for that. And I was over there just now having lunch, and was fans in there from New York. There was fans in there from New York that had Yankees, Giants T-shirts on that have come here to see Bonds' number to be retired and see all the Hall of Famers because they know it's a special day.
Wow.
It's a special day.
Wow. Yeah, so cool. Wednesday night I'm coming over. We do our podcast. We tape it here. Then I'm coming over to watch the Dodger game. I think you'll be there Wednesday night.
We're cutting some commercials that day, so we're looking forward to that. And
yeah. It
just feels good to be back home. I've moved back here with my wife, and we're back in the Bay Area in Northern California, and I'm back home. And the Giants have always been my family. I mean, Larry Bear, anytime I see those guys or Mario Iliotti and says, you'll always be a Giant. It doesn't matter who I was working. I was coaching for the Dodgers. The only job I got coaching the Diggleys was from the Dodgers. I always wore a jacket that you couldn't see my name because I was embarrassed. I had to wear that damn blue. I was hoping it would bleed and drip off of me. You know, he said he'd bleed Dodger blue, but you don't.
It doesn't work that way.
No, I interviewed him in the dugout. I interviewed him for a half an hour in the dugout wearing the jacket.
Yeah.
I never
could be hot
we
were in the Midwest or whatever. And how come you're wearing that jacket? So I'm not letting anybody see that my name's on the back of a Dodger jersey, you know?
How about that?
Very good. Hey, stick around.
Okay,
stick around.
Cool.
All right.
Thank you.
Time now for today's Player Spotlight, sponsored by KIS, keeping IT simple since 1988. And for me, the Player Spotlight, I would put it on number 25, Barry Bonds today. Even though he's not in the game, the spirit of Barry Bonds is in the game, and I think the Giants are going to really enjoy this presentation today and come out and try to live up to what Barry Bonds was all about. So for me, Player Spotlight today, Barry Bonds. What do you think?
I'll go number 50. I'll go Ty Block, the guy who's got to make his first start since late May, Marty. He's got an ERA of 4.9 in 12 starts this season. Giants need big innings out of him. Bullpen's been chewed up lately.
Jack, the spirit of Barry Bonds, can it transcend a little bit into the game, you think?
I would think so. Absolutely. You're going to have a fantastic crowd. You got the Hall of Famers there.
Wow.
And you got the class. It's just class. So when you have the class there and Barry and the history and what he's done and what he's accomplished in the game, it's not a better day. I mean, there's players that played with him that I don't know who you've talked to all day, but there's a lot of people in town that just were teammates, and they're not Hall of Famers, they're just teammates, and understand the greatness they've watched every day. I mean, here's a guy that really, I was in awe watching him, and just was like, man, what's going on with the game? They want to walk him all the time. If they picture this guy, he'll hit 100 home runs, he'll drive in 250 runs, and he'll hit 400. That's what fans pay to watch. And he was such a good hitter that if he got in an at-bat, if he got one pitch, that's the one or maybe he got two or three pitches the whole game. And he did damage with, that's how fine-tuned and special of a hitter he was, mechanically and mentally strong, spiritually and everything else, to be able to go up there, walk into that box, stand in his own 2 feet, and deliver something that you just are probably never going to see again,
wow,
to be honest with
wow
you.
All right, stick around. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Jack Clark. Boy, a special day around the ballpark today.
Very special.
Yeah. Very special.
I'm blessed to be here, man.
I'm pushing for that number 22 next. I want to tell you that.
All right.
I am. And it's not only yours.
Will the three.
For both of you. And I honestly mean that. That number is
and
so...
And mazel tov to you going into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's thank you very much.
That's
Northern California
too.
Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, September 16th.
Thank
you very much.
Congratulations, Marty.
All right, very good. All right, more coming up right here on the Sports Leader.
Pitch to Barry Bonds in this ballgame.
And I think last night Barry paid tribute to Mark McGwire, and rightfully so.
1-1 hit in the air to center field, 399! Do you believe it? The home run record is gone! There's a new one! 72! Barry Bonds!
I guess this guy.
Now back to KNBR's Giants pregame. You're talking baseball with Marty Lurie on The Sports Leader.
I guess the answer to that question from Joe Morgan would be very good. 72 home runs in a year. That's damn good. Barry Bonds, number 72. The same game he hit 71 off of Chan Ho Park.
Amazing.
I was in the dugout.
You were there? Yeah.
I saw that. I saw that one before, the day before.
It was 73 you saw Sunday, and then 71 and 2 were both on the Friday night. Sean Estes had given up 5 runs in that first inning. Yeah. And then Giants were eliminated, but they had the big ceremony following the ball game.
Those are not cheap ones he hit.
No, those were mammoth shots that he hit.
You know, and you think about it. You can't really tell. Understand why kids nowadays, a lot of the Giants players, and why they don't do a lot of things mechanically. Hit it, choke up on the bat, have more control of that barrel, stay back on the ball, trust your hands, and get ready for fastballs. I mean, he had such a good eye because he stayed back and he wasn't jumpy. You know, he trusted.
Yeah.
And he choked up on the bat, so it made him easy to get the barrel to the ball instead of long looping casty swings. And he didn't foul a lot of cheap check swings off the other way like you see nowadays in jam shots. They were legitimate passes through the strike zone. They might be fouled straight back, but that, in his mind, like all of us, if you did that, you knew you were right on.
You're on it. Yeah.
You were on it, and you're only a click away from, and you don't have to center it. You hit a home run, it's actually you're missing it just a tad to get it in the air because you're trying to hit it perfect and hit a line drive out of the ballpark, and when you miss it a little bit, but you have the correct swing, that's a perfect uppercut swing without uppercutting. And guys nowadays, because of this launch angle and all that and exit velocity, they don't understand a natural uppercut by getting the barrel there fast, and the natural torque and everything finishes nice and high without having to uppercut, and it's a natural uppercut without uppercutting and putting length and distance and you don't have as much power, and you have missed hits, and the barrel's in there. And you can still get a hit. Hit a home run, but you do it at the pace that some of the guys that were great hitters like Musial, Ted Williams, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Barry Bonds.
Boy, amazing. Jack Clark with us.
Always, Babe Ruth.
Always good to talk to Jack, always about baseball. You know, it's funny, you're a hitting coach for the Dodgers, and hitting has always been special for you. You told me the story how you'd fly out here to meet Hank Sauer and go to the batting cage with the quarters and then fly back to wherever you were to straighten out your swing. But today's game is so different. Did they shift on you? I mean, you're a big pull hitter, a power hitter.
You know, if they did, you didn't really pay attention to it because who cares? I mean, you can't say, oh, they shifted, so I got to change the way I'm going to turn to a punch of Judy now and try to slap it the other way. That's not who I am. It's kind of like I try to hit it as hard enough to drive the third baseman into left field, and I wanted the guys to play. I was a slugger. My job was to go ahead and drive in runs, and I'm trying to do some damage with one swing of the bat best I can. Because you also get guys on third base, and you want sacrifice flies on balls you miss hit. You want all the good at-bats when it's a team RBI type thing to over the course of a whole season. So, all that stuff about, well, you're shifting and all that. Well, then, you know what? I was always taught, you just said Hank Sauer and come back and put tokens in the machine.
Yeah, you should tell me.
Yeah, well, I mean, if the whole trick was if they put a shift on or you're hitting line drives and catching the ball, then the whole trick was what I was taught as a Giant, a San Francisco Giant, hit it where the grass don't grow because nobody can catch it there. And that's what they did. That was the Giants' theory of hitting. They weren't great on a lot of the little fundamentals because they didn't do them. The Dodgers, that was their gig. The Giants was out slugging. Jim Ray Hart, Mays, McCovey, Tom Haller, Tito, all those guys. They were going to score more runs and out slugging. That's what we were taught as kids coming up through the minor leagues. Make good passes through the strike zone and try to do your dance. So when you saw Kevin Mitchell and you saw Will Clark, we all had that little bat waggle that we had. That was Hank Sauer. That's the way he hit. If you look at Hank Sauer, he laid that bat. He'll always tell you, he didn't lay it on the top. He didn't lay it on the side. There's like this shirt sleeve, that little thing. You put the bat there, and then when you lift it off, you're in a good spot to go ahead and Do the NFC, he was the MVP in Chicago. He had 42 home runs.
The thing about Hank Sauer, and fans, if you don't remember Hank Sauer, he was a great left fielder. Couldn't cover much ground. As Willie said, you take the line, I'll cover everything else. But, boy, he was a slugger, MVP of the National League in 1952. And the amazing thing is that he hit three homers in a game twice off the same guy, Kurt Simmons. Unbelievable. I said, didn't he knock you down or anything? He said, nah, you know, I just swung the bat. And that's what he did. But, you know, I was thinking about you, 83, you know, chasing the Dodgers in 83 and Joe Morgan hitting the home run at the end of the season.
A great teammate. I was just really blessed to have him at that point in my career, you know. So, I mean, his locker was right next to me. We had the same agent, Tom Rich. They put his locker right next to mine. Just he would get to the ballpark, his preparation for batting practice in Candlestick Park, to go get his work in, his ground balls, his batting practice, just very, very serious. The way he hit off the tee, he taught me a lot about hitting. He's a little guy. Yeah. Joe's small. But he's the only first guy I taught ever saw do this, and he put the batting tee way out in front of the plate. And I was like, well, how can he reach that? But if you do the right things mechanically, you can get the barrel to the baseball in a quick way and keep the ball fair. And he used to stand up in the batter's box. And I always asked him, I said, well, why do you stand? Because I stood way in the back. That's what I wanted, because they were throwing, like Juan was saying, you know, Mays and those guys in Drysdale, they were throwing at your face, at your head, you know. So I stood in the back because I'm a big guy. And they're like, well, that's what this guy's trying to hit the ball to the ballpark. Joe stood way up in the front of the box. And his reasoning was not to hit, if he stood in the back of the box and hit the ball, it would either be foul or it'd be straight and go right over the bag and straight down the right field line, and that would be a double. But if he stood up in the box, he had a better angle and would hit the ball, and when it went over the first base bag, it went deep down in the corner. That was a triple. This was the big red machine, Joe Morgan, Pete Rose mentality. And Joe Morgan always said everybody should have an opportunity, and you know Joe's awesome. Everybody should have an opportunity to play with Pete Rose and for Sparky Anderson. And Joe, after I played with him here in San Francisco, he always told me, and he says it to this day, Jack, you could have been on the Big Red Machine. That's one of the best compliments I ever had from somebody. That Big Red Machine was a very serious team.
Yeah.
And they played a certain brand of game that there was no talking with anybody before the game. Those guys were very serious.
No fraternizers, yeah.
And Hall of Famers, kind of like Juan was saying, Marichal, Mays, these guys all came up together, you know? And for them all to be in the Hall of Fame all at the same time from a certain era, very, very special. And I mean, wow, we're pretty fortunate and blessed to have that here in San Francisco, that type of group.
Well, I'm glad you could be here today.
Thanks, Marty.
Angie, nice to see you here today. Of course, Angie, right? I remember.
It's my wife, Angie.
Come on, I remembered her name. This is good for me. I told her I'm going to remember her name. But fans, you can come out to the Pine Tar Grill, 5th and Folsom. See Jack many nights. I know I'll be there Wednesday. You'll be there Wednesday.
Well, it's Candlestick Park themed restaurant. So if you're a fan of Candlestick and San Francisco Giants history, there's over 600 bats in there from all the players.
And if you stump Dave, I don't know, how much beer do you get? Do you get one or do you get a couple if they stump you and you don't have many as you can drink? All right.
I mean, Mario Aloto tried to stump him the other night.
I know.
He was dropping some names I hadn't even heard of.
Tommaso Garcia.
Dave's like, oh, I got that one, too.
Yeah, no, he had them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you
Dave's
for stopping
great.
By.
Thank you, Mario.
All right, that's Jack Clark.
Thank you.
More coming up. KNBR 680, the sports leader.